Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we're going to be talking about what we've watched recently, and our moderator will be Ana Sofia. Take it away.
Welcome back, and today we're going to talk about movies and TV shows that we have watched recently. Do we recommend it or do we not recommend it? You're all about to find out. So, to start off, Shiva Baby has recently dropped out on VOD, and Josie has been ranting about it on her timeline. So, Josie, to start off, what are your thoughts on Shiva Baby?
This is my time to shine. This is my new agenda.
Get ready. Grab your popcorn, grab your tea. She's about to go off.
Yes. So if you'd like more information about Shiva Baby, I'm actually going to be reviewing it for Full Circle Cinema, and I'm working so hard on that review because, again, as Gabriela just mentioned, this is my new baby. This is something I love now. This is my new Portrait of a Lady on Fire that I've been waiting for. So get ready for what I'm about to say. Clearly, this is huge. So Shiva Baby was released in 2020. It premiered at festivals. It has a runtime of 77 minutes. But it's such an impactful 77 minutes. So it is directed and written by Emma Seligman. And it is actually a direct adaptation of her short by the same name, Shiva Baby. And I was able to watch the short. You can watch it online. And it is the same concept as the feature. But of course, the feature expands on what the short started. So I'm just going to talk about the feature at this point. It stars Rachel Sennett, and it is about a college student that attends a family shiva, or a Jewish funeral service, where she is accosted by her relatives, outshined by her ex-girlfriend, and comes face to face with her sugar daddy and his family. So this film defies genre. It cannot be placed in a single box. It is so wonderful. It's been compared to so many different things. For me and a couple of other critics, they have described this as a horror film, even though it's not a horror film. It's actually kind of like a dark comedy. It is a comedy and at the forefront. But it does feel like a horror film at times just because of the anxiety and the tension, and also the film score has been compared to the style that a horror film would have due to the tension and atmosphere that it creates. And also a lot of people have even compared it to Hitchcock when it comes to that. But I will leave it there because I don't want to say too much. All I'm going to say is that please watch this film. It is available to rent at this moment on Video On Demand, as Anna mentioned. I watched it on Amazon Prime for $6.99, and it is well worth it. Posers, do you have any questions? Is there anything you would like to say about it? I know that you guys have been putting up very kindly with my with my raving.
I can't believe you just called it your new Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, is it that?
It's like, so here's the thing. It's not my portrait per se. Portrait will always be portrait. But I don't know about you guys, but this past year between 2020 and the beginning of 2021, I think a lot of people on the timeline would agree with me that last year, even though we did get a lot of good films and watching award season come to an end, we can't appreciate the films that are going to be awarded in the upcoming days. But nothing had the impact that previous years have had. We have had a little bit of a dry spell. And again, even though the films were good, like I've been waiting for another film to make me feel the way Portrait of a Lady on Fire did. And this is as close as it comes. So that says a lot. Like, I'm not saying this lightly. I know the weight that these words have. And I think that everyone will get something out of Shiva Baby.
Good to know. It has been on my list for a while, so I should get it done. I should just watch it to join you in your love and raving.
Honestly, I'm excited to watch it.
I think, por lo menos, si alguien no tiene que ver, por favor, Anna, you have to see it because I honestly believe you'd appreciate it because I know that you're one that's like, I don't do romantic comedies. And this film does have a bit of like, it feels like a dark romantic comedy because it does have some of the tropes that we discussed in our previous episode about how to write a romantic comedy. But again, Emma Seligman does this unique thing where, again, the film has different elements from different genres and it mixes them so well.
No, because yeah, like after seeing you rave about this film, I really want to see it. I'm interested, and my timeline has been full of Shiva Baby and the actress. I saw her Twitter and she's hilarious.
She's brilliantly chaotic and it goes so well with her character.
Exactly, that's what people are saying, so I'm highly curious to watch it.
I know of the lead star because of a funny video she made about what? It's LA.
It's LA. If you don't have an eating disorder, get one, bitch.
That's exactly where I know her from.
If you recognize those words, yes, that is the protagonist. That is the lead actress of the film, so watch it. Also, Molly Gordon is in this, which I only knew her from Booksmart, and then when I looked her up, she has done a lot of other films. So clearly she is well known up to an extent. And again, I knew her from Booksmart and I really loved her in Booksmart. So seeing her here made me enjoy the film even more. Also, Diana Agron is in this film, which of course,
yes.
Glee days. If you watch Glee, you know Diana Agron. And she was also in that, was it Number 4? Yes, Number 4. She was in that film as well.
I Am Number 4.
Yeah, I Am Number 4. So it was nice to see her again. I do like her as an actress, and she was really good in this film.
Yay, I'm surprised it took you. You only spent like 5 minutes on it, Josie. Well done. Well done.
Gracias.
A round of applause. Okay, so next up. As resident of the Paddington fan club, I was so happy that Juan told me that he watched Paddington. Juan, can you please tell me your thoughts?
I would love to. A little backstory. So for Easter, my mom and I wanted to just relax. So we just started watching some comfort films, and she had never seen Paddington. I saw the first one, and I loved it. So I had to fix that immediately. So I saw the first two films. It was a delight to revisit the first film. It's fantastic. Highly recommend. It is cinema. Like, how can you tell me Birdman deserved Best Picture over the film that is desperately missing from the Criterion Collection and wrongfully snubbed from award season? Anna, would you not agree?
Exactly.
And then
Paddington deserves the Criterion to be in the Criterion Collection.
Exactly. And you can't tell us otherwise. And then I saw the second one for the first time because I wanted to see it, didn't get to it, and then on a Black Friday, like in 2018, the Blu-ray was at like $6. So I was like, the first one was fantastic, why won't I like the second one? And then I just never got to it. So I saw it, and I cried 6 times. That says a lot, because I don't cry that much in movies unless it was like, the Dumbo live action made me cry a lot. And then this film, it was everything. It was better than the first film. This film made Wes Anderson retire. Like, the color palette in this movie, chef's kiss. Oh my God. The production design, the wholesomeness. And if you don't cry at the last scene, you're not human. And that's not okay. It is so heartwarming what happens at the end. Like, I'm still going to campaign for these films to go to the Criterion Collection. They're so good. Like, I loved them. They were so wholesome. They were fun. They had funny moments. They were kind of chaotic, which is my brand. And there was in this film a free Paddington button. And I believe that Anna and I should have those.
We should. I keep saying it, and those that follow me on Twitter, they know that I love Paddington, and Paddington 2 is one of those cases that the sequel is better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's Chef's Kiss. It's so wholesome. And yes, I cried one time.
No, I cried six. I cried six. There were so many instances when, like, when he was in the jail and he was in that bit of a dream scene. And then he just goes back to reality. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to free this bear. I'm going to break into the federal prison system and break him out.
Release Paddington for the shackles of capitalism, first of all.
Oh my, when he had to join the workforce, I was like, Paddington, I identify with your struggle. I too want to buy people the gifts they deserve, but have to join the workforce to be able to afford them because of capitalism. And he ended up going to jail for it.
Okay, but can we talk about the transition of him going to jail?
He was just like working, doing all these jobs, and then something happens, and boom, he's in court. And I'm here like, how are you putting a bear on trial? But also, this is amazing. And then, Anna, is it me or, like, when I saw the jail scene, like, when he had to wash the uniforms and he had the incident of the red sock, which, same, buddy, same, been there. Is it me or did that, like, not make the scene look like the Grand Budapest Hotel, but kind of better? Like, who you think better?
Yes, because, okay, so... For those that haven't watched Paddington 2, a lot of people compare it to a Wes Anderson film because of the palette colors and actually how symmetrical the film is. And yeah, especially people compare the prison scenes with a Wes Anderson film, especially the Grand Budapest Hotel. And I see it. I totally see it, and I'm here for it.
Like, we need the third film in our lives. We don't just want it. We need the third film.
Honestly, okay, but the Paddington trilogy for the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
That's it.
I will buy that at full price on Blu-ray with no problem. Period. We just need the Criterion Collection version of the Paddington trilogy. We're not asking for much. And the film has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, the second film, if I remember correctly. If not 99. One of those two. That's still one of the highest ever. More reason for it to go to the Criterion Collection. And like Elle Woods, I would like to rest my case.
Okay, so next up, Gabriela, it's your time to shine. Can you please talk about the Snyder Cut?
Oh, God.
Thank you. Lord have mercy.
Okay, so I don't know if you know this, but there's this little independent film called Justice League.
I interject. Please keep it shorter than the runtime.
Please, we have other movies to discuss. Not everything has to be 4 hours. I agree with Josie.
Release the Snyderverse, Gabriela. I am with you.
Restore the Snyderverse. Okay.
Restore the Paddington verse. That's what I say.
It's being restored. You're getting Paddington 3. We don't know what's going to happen after Zack Snyder's Justice League. So let me have this moment.
I mean, they already said no.
Yeah. I still have hope. Come on, fans bugged Warner Brothers and DC to release the Snyder Cut for over 4 years.
Yeah, there's just so much trouble right now when it comes to Warner Bros. And those... I always love how I call them Warner Bros. And not Warner Brothers. But anyways,
right?
There's just so much trouble right now with those properties, especially with like the Ray Fisher article, the expose that came out with the Hollywood Reporter and just everything that happened on set. And like, nothing. Talk about it and talk about the Schneider Cut and then I can give a rundown.
Yeah, I mean, what's happening. I still have hope for Scream Queen Season 3, but you know. Hasn't come through yet.
Juan, this is the Snyder Cut, not Scream Queen. Shut up.
I'm trying to see which has more hope.
No, I think we have more chances of restoring the Snyderverse than another season of Scream Queens.
Another agenda of mine taken down.
Okay, now, I don't know if you know this. There's this small independent movie called Justice League that came out in 2017. And it was supposed to be, you know, the beginning of what Zack Snyder wanted to do with terms of the Justice League. But sadly, he had to leave mid-production. And the film was completed by Joss Whedon. And we all know how bad that film ended up being. So for years, fans wanted Zack Snyder's version of Justice League to be released. And so finally, after years of begging and making...
About 4 years, to be exact.
4 years of making the hashtag release the Snyder Cut trend on Twitter literally every single week, we got the Snyder Cut, and it was released exclusively on HBO Max, and it has a whopping 4-hour runtime. Now, first I was hesitant. I did not like the 2017 Justice League, as many people didn't, and I'm not the biggest Zack Snyder fan, but, you know, I really like that he got to finish what he wanted to make and honor his daughter by finishing this project and finally having it released for many people to watch. And whether you like Zack Snyder or not, you know, I think that was nice that he got to see his vision completed. So I decided to watch it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I remember starting it and then like 30 minutes in just being like, oh my God. Like, I knew I was going to love it. And, you know, yeah, it's long, but I've seen long movies before. I really don't mind. So, could it be shorter? Yeah, but I personally didn't mind the runtime. But overall, I really loved it. The story made sense. The characters were all balanced. You know, they cut out all that bad stuff. You know, the family that they added in Russia, that made no sense in the previous cut. It's gone now. They focus exclusively on all the heroes, and the villains are so much better. Like, I loved Steppenwolf, and his character design was incredible. And we finally got to see Darkseid, and that was so freaking cool. And overall, it's a hefty movie. It's heavy. It's long. But I really loved it, and I am a defender of the Snyder Cut, and I loved the teaser of what's now called the Nightmare Timeline, where it was a sneak peek of what Zack Snyder wanted to do in the next Justice League film, and I loved it. I loved that, and I wish we could see it. I wish we could see how it all would play out. You know, I don't think it's gonna happen. But part of me still hopes that maybe one day, but I really love the Snyder Cut, and I have been annoying the posers with it for like the last month, saying that I want the Snyderverse restored. And even at a screening that we went to, I was yelling, release this, restore the Snyderverse.
I'm surprised you didn't get thrown out.
It created chaos.
She almost did.
Yeah.
So, tú sabes, una sala llena de críticos y alguien grita restore the Snyderverse, what do you expect is going to happen? Also, I wanted to add earlier how you were saying a small independent film called Justice League, and I'm here like, I wish small independent films had even half of the budget.
Yeah, honestly.
Got.
Or half of the support.
Again, I love the Snyder Cut, and I would love to know the posers who have seen it. I want to know their thoughts.
Hey, I'm part of the audience that's like, I'll watch it, but don't ask me to sit through it twice. I think once is enough for me. But I am liking certain aspects, but I'm in the minority of people who got tired of hearing the lamentation cries. Like, I'm sorry. I got tired real quick.
No, I love it. I love it. Each time I played, it was like, I'm at the club with my friends and we're jamming.
I don't know how you could jam to a lamentation cry.
You just vibe to it, Juan. Don't ask questions.
You just vibe.
Like, I get where they put it, and I'm here like, okay, it makes sense. But after the fifth time, I'm kind of like, you know, maybe tone it down, because I'm here like, it's pretty loud.
They did overdo it, because it was basically just one character getting their own theme music whenever they arrived into a situation.
Yeah, but, that's my point. I
mean, at this, you can't take it that seriously. That's why I'm like, I'm just gonna vibe. I'm just gonna vibe with it.
Maybe that's my problem, yeah.
Yes.
But I will say, every time Wonder Woman's theme song comes in, I'm here like, hell yeah. This is what I'm signing up for.
Es que es lo mejor score-wise que se ha hecho en el DC Universe and nobody can tell me anything.
I 100% agree with
Universe,
you.
I apologize. But yeah, it's one of the best theme songs, I will say. Y mira que they have some iconic theme songs when it comes to DC. But I think what they've done with like the Wonder Woman theme song itself throughout the past reiterations of the character, it's just so impactful. You hear it and immediately you just want to kick down a wall.
You do. You really do. It's fun.
Yes. And we can thank my boy Hans Zimmer for that.
I mean, it's pretty admirable what the fans did for the movie to be able to come out.
Yeah.
And it also changes the future with films when it comes to releasing like never before scenes.
Yeah, it also just says a lot about what fans can do, considering that this isn't the first time that people tweeting something has sparked change. For example, the Sonic agenda, when they actually made the release a new trailer with a new design for the character because everyone hated the original. So,
yeah.
I mean, it says a lot about what people have as in terms of power when it comes to the industry right now. I wish it could be used for more important things, considering that there are a lot of people asking for more representation or better treatment on sets and in the industry. But it's doing something.
Okay, real quick with Sonic, the fact that they went through all of that and they didn't even give him the VFX nomination. Like, come on. That's not fair. Anna will agree with me.
I totally agree. Okay, so moving on. So sometimes you just need to, like, lay back and watch a comedy. And Bad Trip recently came out on Netflix. And it's about two pals that embark on a road trip full of funny pranks that pull real people into mayhem. So it stars Eric Andre, and if you guys don't know, he's a comedian, and he also has the Eric Andre Show. And it also has Little Rain Howlery, Tiffany Haddish, and Michaela Collins. And I like how they used... So they follow a script. However, the pranks that they pull, the people around it, is real people. So I thought it was pretty funny. It has raunchy comedy and it does pretty extreme stuff that if you guys don't know Eric Andre, he is mostly known for that kind of stuff. So I thought it was pretty funny. And also it's from the producers of Jackass. And if you guys haven't seen Jackass or have it, see, you guys get a pretty like idea of it. So I also thought that Tiffany Haddish did a great job in making all the pranks believable. Honestly, it was a fun time watching it. It's available on Netflix. Like, if you like comedy and if you like prank movies, and if you actually like the Eric Andre Show, I feel that you're also gonna like this because basically it's just one big Eric Andre Show episode. So next up is Josie, that I recently saw that you logged Roman Holiday, and it's a film that has been talked about in film classes. So what are your thoughts on it?
Oh boy. Okay. So for people that don't know, which I'm pretty sure everyone knows, I just arrived a little late to the game, but I'll, you know, better late than never. Roman Holiday is a film from 1953. It was directed and produced by William Wyler. A little bit of history. The writers are Ian McLellan Hunter, John Dighton, and then Dalton Trumbo. Trumbo was actually an American screenwriter and novelist, and he was also part of the Hollywood 10, which were individuals that were cited for contempt of Congress and blacklisted after refusing to answer questions about their alleged involvement with the Communist Party. So he was blacklisted by Hollywood, and he was one of the 2 of the 10 that publicly admitted to being a communist while testifying before the committee. And it wasn't until 2011 that the Guild restored his credits as a writer on the screenplay for the romantic comedy. So basically 60 years after the fact. But he has the principal credit for Roman Holiday. And it was actually the first major American film Audrey Hepburn starred in, for which she won Best Actress at the Academy Awards. So this film has a lot of historical value beyond being a cinema darling. So in terms of what happens in the film, overwhelmed by her suffocating schedule, touring European Princess Anne takes off for a night while in Rome. When a sedative she took from her doctor kicks in, however, she falls asleep on a park bench and is found by an American reporter, Joe Bradley, who takes her back to his apartment for safety. At work the next morning, Joe finds out Anne's regal identity and bets his editor he can get an exclusive interview with her. Bet, of course. Romance soon gets in the way. So, again, this is one of, like, this is romantic comedy from the beginning. And you can feel it. It reminded me a lot of Notting Hill, which is very surprising because I passed the movie to Google Notting Hill, and the director of Notting Hill is aware of the comparisons between his film and Roman Holiday. But they say that they have never seen Roman Holiday, and I'm like, that smells like a lie. But I'll buy it. I'll bite. It's okay. But yeah, in terms of for the film itself, I enjoyed it. My favorite part is the ending, actually. I really like how they ended it.
You know, I've never seen Roman Holiday either.
Oh my god, you have to watch it. Especially, it's Audrey Hepburn's first film. So I thought that was a really nice debut for her, considering, again, it was her debut and she was so good in it.
Yeah. I've heard great things about her. You know, it's like one of those classics that, you know, everyone loves. And yeah. I didn't know that Trumbo was a screenwriter for this film. I've heard of
Trump. He was the principal writer, but yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of him and his story. But I didn't know Roman Holiday was one of his projects. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, porque le habían quitado el crédito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he, like, the Oscar that he won for The Brave One, like, another writer, like, went in his place to the Academy Awards because they wouldn't allow his name on the screenplay. And it wasn't until years later that his Oscar was given to him. Yeah, that whole story with the blacklisted screenwriters is very interesting.
Communism.
So, Juan, can you give us a little bit of update with what's happening on Drag Race?
All right, so if you know me, you know I'm really bad at watching shows weekly. And in general, because I always prioritize movies. But there's one thing since the pandemic started that I watched weekly, and it's been really comforting to watch it. And it's RuPaul's Drag Race. It's a really fun show. It's really good. And right now they are on season 13. It is the pandemic season where they are showing what they went through in terms of filming the show during a pandemic. And they're still able to do the challenges. They're quarantined. It's been a really good season so far. It's had like 3 to 4 beginning episodes. Because they did something new with the system of the season, which I liked. But also, this is the longest season, I think. It's been fun. We're right now, by the time this episode is released, it's going to be the top 4 performing one of RuPaul's songs and adding their verses to it. The top 4 are currently, oh wait, I don't know if I should mention it in case people haven't seen it, but the top 4, they're a really good top 4. I think a lot of people were expecting this top 4, and some people were maybe expecting other people to take one certain spot. For me, I saw 3 of them for sure in the top 4. I didn't know if one was going to make it or not, but glad they did. It's fun. The snatch game is always great. Highly recommend. Drag Race staple. All the challenges have been cool, and it's kind of like, I don't know who's going to win, which I like. Because before, sometimes you knew right away who was going to win, like it made it obvious, but now you're like, it's really anyone's game, which I like. Because for my competition shows, I like to be invested, and also like, if this one wins, I'll be happy. If this one wins, I'll be happy. If this one wins, I'll be happy. I won't be happy if this one wins. You know what I mean? It keeps things interesting. And it's on VH1. And for people watching in the United States, if you have Paramount Plus, I believe you can watch all the previous seasons on there. I know it's on Paramount Plus, but I don't know how many seasons are there. For Puerto Rico, Paramount Plus is still not available, which, to quote Tatiana, choices. And yeah, I've been keeping up weekly with that show. It's been fun. I like it. It's great. I discovered it with a shout out to Kiara when we were making a class together. And we started talking with one of our professors about it. And it's been great. It's been a great ride. I want to see more Latina queens. I want to see more Puerto Rican queens. The Puerto Rico drag scene here is so talented. It's so amazing. I would like to see that featured more on Drag Race. We don't really always have a queen exactly from Puerto Rico there. I'm just throwing that out there, manifesting that energy. You know what I mean? But the season has been great. I will say that.
I haven't seen Drag Race, but I do enjoy seeing the video reactions to it. Now, for the next movie that we're going to discuss, it's Gabriela. So first of all, I'm sorry that I ignored you.
This is unforgivable, Anna.
I didn't ignore you. I was doing homework, and sometimes the Twitter DMs for the film poster said to me, this is a lot of content. So it gets lost through the messages, and Gabriela told me, I'm watching First Cow, and I didn't saw the tweet, and I'm sorry.
Not only was I watching First Cow, I was going through it. So Anna had watched this film last year, I think. When did you watch? Last year? And she recommended it to me. She said, Gabriela, you're really going to like this film. You should watch it. And I had it on my list. And so I finally watched it. It's available to stream on Showtime. And for those of you who don't know, First Cow is an A24 movie. It is directed by Kelly Reichardt, if that's how it's pronounced. And it's about... it's a film about friendship, about two men who decide to start baking and they steal the milk from the first cow. And that cow, why isn't she nominated for Best Actress? Because I would die for Evie the cow. She was the greatest thing ever. I loved her. She is so beautiful. Like, if you've seen First Cow, you know Anna. Isn't she the greatest cow ever?
Amy the cow. She is so pretty. She's so cute. She's stunning. Okay?
She's gorgeous. So
she deserves the best.
Yes. So it's a film about friendship. It's such a lovely film. It's so soothing. It cleanses the soul and then it destroys you. I was going through it. I kept texting, I am crying over a cow at 2 a.m, and no one offered their services to help. But I'm more disappointed in Anna. So.
Again, I want to publicly apologize to Gabriela for not giving her the support that she needed in the moment.
While it is a beautiful film about friendship, it also ends up being really sad. And like, I needed the support. Anyways, I loved First Cow. The directing is so spectacular. It's so beautiful. And it's shot in the smaller aspect ratio, kind of like First Reformed and the Snyder Cut. So I loved it. And yeah, it's nominated for the Independent Spirit Awards. So hopefully it wins something. Because totally deserves to. It's such a lovely film. It's so well made. And again, justice for Evie the cow.
It's just, the film starts out with you already know what's gonna happen at the end.
Yeah, I think that's what crushed me the most. I was not expecting it.
It gives you such a, it gives you a wholesome ride, not gonna lie. I love their friendship. The cinematography is stunning. And also, best of all, Evie the cow.
Evie the cow. She's gorgeous. I never thought I would be crying over a cow at 2 in the morning, but...
Now you know. Okay. So, I was updating on my watch list for the Oscar nominations. And one of the nominees is called The Mole Agent, which is nominated for Best Documentary. And it's available on Hulu. So, the movie is about... When a daughter becomes concerned about her mother's will being in a retirement home, an investigator called Romulo hires an 83-year-old man called Sergio to investigate in the retirement home to see if the mother was okay. I loved this documentary. It's, at first, it was such a wholesome thing, especially when you see the journey that Sergio goes, and he is an old guy and he doesn't know a lot about technology, and then the first is you see him like getting started with it, and then when he goes into retirement home you see that he is such a humble guy and he's so nice to the people that are inside. But of course his main task, he is an investigator, he needs to investigate if one of the people that lives there is okay. But we get more than that. We get other characters. And the way that this document is shot, you just can't believe that this is a documentary, because the cinematography is really good and it's spectacular. And it's such a wholesome... I keep saying wholesome because it is. Because the old guy, he is one of those, like, abuelitos. Can you just, like, oh my god, I want to hug him. But the thing is, this movie also centers on a problem that tends to happen in a retirement home, that people from the older generation tend to be forgotten about their families, and it also touches that kind of subject. And by the end of it, it leaves you thinking about these type of families and how they're left behind. So it is such a heartbreaking but yet wholesome movie, because you get to see and know these people that you tend to love by the end of the documentary. And I really hope it gets nominated. I really hope it won Best Documentary, because it's such a lovely documentary and I feel people should definitely watch this one. I was texting in the poster chat like, why am I crying right now, and sending crying pictures.
And then the Mole Agent Twitter account replied to you.
See, how dare they? They know, okay? They knew that I was there crying because of them. Now, the next film that we're going to talk about is one that Josie saw that is called Feeling Through.
So I think Gabriela can talk about this with me. Yes. It is 19 minutes long. It is available on YouTube. It is a short film from 2020, written and directed by Doug Rowland, and it is currently nominated for an Oscar. It is, I gave it 5 stars without remorse. Summary, just so you get an idea. While wandering around New York, 18-year-old Tariq encounters Artie, a deaf blind man trying to get home. It is so emotional. I hope it wins. I don't know what else to say. It's really touching.
It's so lovely. I went into it because we were getting screeners for the Oscar-nominated shorts, so I decided to watch them. And Josie actually was the one who said you need to watch Feeling Through like right now. So I did, and I loved it. It's so heartwarming, and you know, I love this bond that the two characters form, and yeah, it was just a good wholesome time. I was smiling and laughing, and yeah, I want it to win. It's definitely a really cute short. And fun fact, it's the first time a short featuring a deafblind person is ever nominated for the Oscars. So that's a fun fact.
No, Sian, it was just really nice. And I've seen some people commenting that the beginning was a little bit slow. And I'm like, I didn't even notice it. For me, I think everything played out really well. And the interactions were genuine. The setups and payoffs are really nice. I just think it's neat.
Yes, it is. Nothing but love for feeling through here.
So the next film we're going to talk about, or Juan is going to talk about, is Breaking News in Yuba Country. When you said that you didn't enjoy it as much as you would, but it does have its moments.
Yeah, so Breaking News in Yuba County is directed by Tate Taylor. He directed The Help. He directed a little small independent film called Ma, starring Octavia Spencer. I don't know if anyone here has heard about Ma.
Ma just wanted to party.
That's right.
I still have to see that film. I think I'm the only one that hasn't.
It's for the memes, Josie.
The memes are,
yeah, that's
funny.
Why I want to watch it.
So, yeah, Yuba County, it has an all-star cast. You have Allison Janney, Mila Kunis, Regina Hall, Awkwafina, Wanda Sykes. You have Samara Wiley. Like, you have a really great cast. And I'm here going into it like, okay, this is going to be a comedy, a really dark comedy. It has a great cast. I know these actresses and actors are funny. So I'm here like, this is going to be a great time. And while I love the cast and I was intrigued by the characters and the setup, I feel the story was a mess that at one point towards the end just becomes upsetting to watch, which is unfortunate because it had potential. Like, there were two moments right before the halfway point where if you're a character in this movie, you could probably easily figure out that the main character's alibi was false. And when you're writing a film like that, like a Weekend at Bernie's type of thing, or you're trying to get away with murder, if you've seen the show appropriately titled How to Get Away with Murder, you know that there are certain things you're not supposed to say or do if you want to get away with it. Even if you're new at it, you kind of just know to keep your story straight. And the main character became unlikable very quickly, which is upsetting. I couldn't root for her at one point. At one point, I was just like, you should just get caught, which is sad. Like, it tried to be Gone Girl with some dark humor. That's the best way I could describe it. But it doesn't stick the landing. And like Anna had mentioned, there were moments that were good and showed potential for the story, but it got too messy for its own good. I think the comedy came best from Awkwafina and Regina Hall and Wanda Sykes. I thought Mila Kunis did a great job as her character that she plays in comedy, a version of the straight man, which is basically the one you bounce your joke off before you knock it out of the park. She did a great job. Allison Janney, I feel she does a good job, but her character is just becomes so unlikable, and it's like if your character had been a bit better written, and if this whole movie would have been a bit better written, this could have worked and this could have been really good. It's forgettable, unfortunately. I did forget a lot of what happened.
I was excited for that film when I saw the trailer. Thought it looked fun.
That's the thing. The trailer was really well cut and it looked great. That's why I was like, yeah, this looks like it's gonna be a fun time and the cast is great. But then you're watching it and you're like, oh, the wheels are coming off. The wheels are coming undone. And it's like 90-ish minutes. So I'm here like, this is a perfect length. Maybe they got it right. And then it fell apart for me. And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast.
The next film we're going to talk about, and it's actually Gabriela, is called Atonement. So I think this is a rewatch.
No.
Oh, so this is the first time. Oh, okay. Spill it.
Oh my god. Okay, so as a fellow lover of period pieces, Atonement is one of those films that's always mentioned, it's always brought up. Obviously, it stars period piece royalty Keira Knightley, and it also has James McAvoy and Saoirse Ronan. And it is directed by Joe Wright, who directed the iconic Pride and Prejudice. So, you know, this film is up there, and I have never seen it. And so many people talk about hating Saoirse Ronan because of this film. So it was available on Prime, and I decided, you know what? It's time. Let us find out. Why do people hate Saoirse Ronan because of this movie? And oh my god, I have joined the club. So for those of you who don't know, Atonement was released in 2007. And it follows Keira Knightley and James McAvoy, and they are lovers. And an event causes them to be separated throughout World War II. And those repercussions have, and the effects have, and the consequences of that change the lives throughout the course of 60 years. So it's this whole thing. And yeah, I have joined the club. I hate, like, I don't hate her, but like her character in this film, I hate her. I swear, if I ever catch her on the street, she's gonna catch these hands. I remember when I told a friend that I had watched it, she said that the mention of the name Bryony, which is her character's name, just makes her blood boil. And I am there. Like, you mentioned that name, and I will create fists with my hands, and she makes me so mad. So I honestly did not think it was going to be that dramatic, the hatred towards her, but like, it's justified. It's justified. It's horrible what she did. Like, I don't understand why she did what she did. Anyway, so this was another movie that had me crying at like 1 a.m. And I loved it. I gave it a 5 stars, obviously. But I don't think I can go through it again. I think it's a one-time watch and that's it. And I really enjoyed it despite like the tragedy that it has. You know, it's Joe Wright. You know, the directing and the cinematography are like a painting. So all of that is just absolutely gorgeous. Again, Keira Knightley and James McAvoy, they're always great. And Saoirse Ronan actually earned an Oscar nomination for this character, which, I mean, she did make me hate her in the span of 2 hours, so there's that. But I really love this film, and it's, you know, it's like older, so I know a lot of people have watched it, and I know a lot of people have the same feelings that I have towards this movie. But if you haven't watched it, I recommend it. If you want to get really mad at Saoirse Ronan for 2 hours, please do so. But you know, it has its good moments, like James McAvoy and Keira Knightley, so I really enjoyed it. And please, if you ever see me, do not mention the name of that character. You guys have never seen it? I'm the only one?
I never seen it.
I know what the poster looks like.
I mean, I don't think you'll like it. I'm the one who's like loves period pieces, so.
I mean, it depends for me. Like, I really have to be into it.
I forgot this movie existed.
Have you seen it?
No, I forgot this movie existed. I'm looking it up right now. I didn't know that. Oh, right. I think it's Monica Gobaira. She's always recommending it on her YouTube channel. And I'm always like, I'm going to watch it. And then she mentions it again. And I'm like, I'm going to watch it. And then I never do. But it's on my watch list. Okay, watch free on IMDb TV. I'm going to watch it. I will
watch it and join the Bryony
for hate. Monica, and now for you.
Thank you. Watch it and join the Bryony hate club with me, and okay. like a lot of people, because it's such an intense hatred, and like I get it.
Yeah. Monica has explained, like she's dubbed into the film a couple of times, so I get the idea of what happens.
But like the hatred is so intense, and I couldn't fathom why it was so intense, but oh my god, it is justified.
I am about to rant because I forgot that Attack on Titan season 4 part 1 ended 2 weeks ago, and I need to talk about it, and I'm sorry.
Grab popcorn and tea, it's another long one.
I'm gonna try to make it short. So if you guys don't know, I'm a huge Attack on Titan fan. So if you follow me on Instagram and on Twitter, you can see that I've been posting a lot about Attack on Titan, because season 4 is the series finale and we already got part 1 and it ended 2 weeks ago. And if you want to check it out, it's available on Hulu. So this season, the one that took the anime was Studio MAPPA, because we believe in Studio MAPPA supremacy. And if you guys don't know, it also animated the new anime called Jujutsu Kaisen and the one that is called Jusuke, which is the one that Lakeith Stanfield is gonna voice act it. Now, going back, this season takes place 4 years after the Attack on Titans, you know, war. I'm not gonna go into spoiler territory. However, now it takes place on the side of Marley. We get to see that side that we never seen in the first 3 seasons. And oh boy. First of all, I love the development. Because from season 1, we get to see the side of the Titan. But now, on season 4, we get to see more human-like side. And we get to see the politics and the, like, behind Marley. It is amazing. It goes very Game of Thrones mode. Big characters die. A lot of fans cry. And I just love it. I love how the story goes. I love how now you get to think about who is actually the bad guy here, because both of their sides have their reasons. And now going back to the animation, I really love how Studio MAPPA did the animation. They wanted to focus on the features that they had in the manga, and it's stunning. Like, first of all, how dare some fans, they started to write on the anime, they're saying, I didn't like that you did this, I didn't like that how you did that, and they actually started to go, like, away from Twitter. They started to, like, cerrando su página because they didn't want the hate from it. Like, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You can't hate on the animators just because you don't like a certain aspect of it. But I can't wait for part 2. Part 2 is gonna come out on winter 2022, and the manga ended this week. And I'm here trying to avoid spoilers because I don't want to know how it ends, and I just want to see it animated. Honestly, it has truly become one of my top animes. And the story, I love the story, how it has developed since the first season. It's so complex. There's a lot of Easter eggs. It is amazing. I could keep praising Attack on Titans. I'm sorry. I am going on a rant right now. But
no, y también pensar que just Puerto Rican Twitter timeline has been full of Attack on Titan. I have a group chat that every Sunday was like Attack on Titan. So es que también considerando el impacto que tuvo simplemente en la comunidad puertorriqueña. Like, so many people were just talking about it, so I didn't watch it, but I knew about it because just the emotions and the excitement. I mean, when we were location scouting for a short film, and Anna was in the backseat like, Attack on Titan.
Yeah, and my cousin came by my house and literally said, have you seen Attack on Titan? And I told him no, and he was so mad at me. So... Oh
my. Attack on Titan showed up on my timeline because of, like, Anna and some other people I follow, and I'm here like, good for them. Get that. Get those episodes. Get that content.
I'm sorry, but it's just, okay, the fact that the creator of Attack on Titan, since the first chapter, he knew what he wanted to do with the ending. We see in the first episode some flashbacks that actually goes and are connected with season 4. The fact that this madman, He knew what he wanted. Since the beginning, it's amazing, and we get a lot of Easter eggs throughout the seasons. And season four, it's just amazing, and I love how the story is just connecting and is going, and I can't wait for part two, even though I don't want it to end, but it just has to end. I hope it has the ending that it deserves. So I'm going to move on to our next topic, which is a film called The Lady Chantilly that is from 2015, and the one that saw it is Josie.
Okay, so yes, the next film I'm going to be talking about is Lady Chatterley's Lover, which if you haven't been keeping up with me, because I don't think I only mentioned it once briefly on Twitter, I am doing my research for a Richard Madden ranked. I don't know if it's going to be a video or something, but we're going to be doing that. And it's going to be courtesy of me, featuring me talking about Richard Madden. What's better than that? And I'm going through his filmography. And I'm also including some of his other projects because he did do a narrative podcast, which you should check out. It is on Spotify. It's called From Now. And it has Brian Cox as well. It was pretty cool. And I'm just going through everything he's done just to see, like, is Richard Madden just really pretty or is he a really good actor? And I say, ¿por qué no los dos? And so Lady Chatterley's Lover is directed by Jed Mercurio. It has a runtime of 89 minutes. And love knows no boundaries. An early 20th century tale of love across class boundaries, which tells the legendary and romantic story of Lady Chatterley's affair with her gamekeeper. Jed Mercurio's adaptation of D.H. Lawrence's classic. It has a 2.8 rating on Letterboxd, so I think that tells you everything you need to know. It is from 2015. It is not the best film, and honestly, it didn't have enough Richard Madden. I needed more. Also, it's just, I wish he would have gotten better direction. It was just very unfortunate to watch because most of what I've been seeing with him, like, he's really good in it, despite if it's good or bad. Like, I like watching him because he's a good actor, and then with this film, I'm like, not enough Richard Madden. So, moving on. So yeah, if you're gonna try to go through his filmography the same way I did, I know there's someone else on Letterboxd that went through his entire filmography, because whenever I go to log a video, a film, they've also logged it, and I'm like, wow, no soy la única, qué bueno. And I think they gave it a higher rating than me, so props to them. Unfortunately, I do not recommend this film. Otra vez, not enough Richard Madden. Pass.
It's so funny how Josie has embarked on what I did with Keanu Reeves, but with Richard Madden.
He is my most watched actor this year, and I plan to keep it that way.
Yeah, I know about that film because on YouTube, a clip of it was randomly recommended to me, and I sent it to Josie.
You showed it to me and I was like, what is this? I must watch. Yeah. And also there's a scene where it's raining and he's like in the rain. I'm like, oh, oh.
I would like to manifest for Josie's marathon that somehow, some way, she is able to watch Richard Madden in the live version of Romeo and Juliet. We're manifesting this for her.
Okay, see, alguien allá afuera knows how to watch Richard Madden as Romeo featuring Lily James's Juliet in the live action, like, live performance. Please hit me up. I would really like to witness that just because, I mean, my research. Think of my research. How can I rank it without watching that? It is on Letterboxd, therefore it counts. I need to watch it. Also, if anyone's listening out there, I would love to adapt Macbeth and for him to star in it. Let's talk. Chit chat, my Twitter at the Josie Marie. I'll mention it again at the end.
I love this. I love Macbeth. So yes, I'm in.
As you can see, Josie is with the Richard Madden agenda.
We love
Richard
that.
Richard Madden
her.
Nation, rise. Also, si me quieren aplicar al final de From Now, I'm totally willing. I would love to have like a coffee Zoom. We can chit chat because I'm so confused. So yeah, throwing that out there.
Okay, so the next film that we're going to talk about is What We Do in the Shadows that Juan recently got to watch.
So What We Do in the Shadows, I discovered it because iTunes had it on sale for a rental for $1. And I had always heard of What We Do in the Shadows. It's always that kind of film of like a lot of film buffs have seen it. They've enjoyed it. It's directed by Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement. And, you know, it's a mockumentary involving vampires. And I was here like, this could be fun. This could be really good. Like, I'm down. And then I saw a reviewer, Karsten Rundquist, review it. And I'm here like, all right, let's give this a shot. We're going to see how this goes. If anything, it's $1. So I rented it. And I gotta say, I laughed a lot more than I thought I would. This was really funny. Like, this is a great gem that I was able to discover. It had some great jokes that still hold up. One of my favorites, Taika delivered. And it's about how he says, I really hope that those guys don't kill those police, because it would mean more police will come. Possibly even Christians, which is totally the last thing we need in this house. And I tell you, I could not stop laughing. I hit that scene in the rewind like 3 times easily, because I just needed to keep laughing. And it was really great. I know there's a show from FX, and that's on my long list of shows that I will eventually get to. But I really liked this one. I thought it was fun. I'm glad I discovered it. It's one of my favorite discoveries of 2021 from another year. Obviously, so far, number one is clearly Paddington 2. But this one's, I'm pretty sure it's a close second in terms of films I've watched from a previous year and discovered in 2021. I really liked it. I would rewatch it. I really recommend this film. It's dark humor. It's great. It's my brand. And it's hysterical. And I'm sorry I didn't watch this sooner.
I love What We Do in the Shadows. It's actually one of my favorites of Taika's filmography. It's just, it is plain funny. That's it. And the scene that you said about the police, it's hilarious.
But when they're hiding the crime scene, I'm here like, what is going on? This is also comedic genius. Where they're like, you see this over here? This is a fire hazard. And I'm here like, you're overlooking a body. Perfect. It just kept getting zanier and crazier, and it was great. And when they go in the clubs, and I really laughed with the clubs. And I don't know if you remember, Anna, but when they were describing how they brought back a human in the beginning, and Taika Waititi puts like a napkin on his neck, and then he like literally goes and is like, all right, he's like preparing it, like he's like really shy, and then he bites into the neck, and he just like a bunch of blood starts splurting out, and he's like, oh god, I hit the wrong vein again. I was like, this is what I expect to happen to a vampire, honestly.
And the fact they just didn't want to wash the dishes because it's too much.
Exactly. They had to have a meeting to call him out. It's like, I didn't want to do the dishes. We had guests over. It was so funny.
Okay. So the next film that we're going to talk about, and it's actually Gabriela. It's called Ending and Beginnings. So Gabriela, what's it about?
Oh, Lord. See, this is what happens when you do a thirst watch. You have consequences.
Joke on Lady Chatterley's lover.
So it's the same case with this one. So Endings Beginnings, it's a film directed by Drake Doremus. And it is about an artist who is dumped by her longtime boyfriend and then finds herself in a love triangle. Now, sounds very, you know, cliched and been there, done that. But the one thing that drew me to this film is that the two best friends with whom the protagonist, who is played by Shailene Woodley, are none other than Sebastian Stan and Jamie Dornan. So this film is, it's bad. It's, you know, it tries to be deep, but it's not deep. It's just, you know, basic premise. And she just has sex with both of them, and good for her. And you kind of wish you were her, because Sebastian Stan and Jamie Dornan at the same time. Like, I'm just saying. Anyways, it took me a while to finish this film because it was kind of boring that I kept pausing it. And also, there's a scene that I texted Josie. Pedro Pascal is in it for like 5 minutes.
Ah, es lo que voy a decir. Not just Jamie Dornan and Sebastian Stan, but también Pedro Pascal says hola.
Yeah.
So he just pops in like, hi.
Yeah. And it was just a thirst watch. If you want to stare at the pretty people for an hour and 40 minutes, it's on HBO Max. Don't expect anything deep. But yeah, you know. It was purely out of for a thirst watch. That's it. But, you know, maybe you'll like it. Maybe it's your type of film. I just like these types of films to have a little more substance to them. This one sadly did not.
So the next films I'm going to talk about are The Hobbit. Okay, but hear me out. So I joined the Lord of the Rings bandwagon pretty late. And I've been ranting about it on Twitter. I just loved the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I was like, okay, I kind of want more. I want the same feeling as when I saw the Lord of the Rings. So I was like, okay, I haven't seen The Hobbit, The Unexpected Journey, and I haven't seen like the other two. When I first saw The Unexpected Journey, I was like, man, what is this? I didn't feel the same way that when I watched Lord of the Rings. I didn't feel the friendship. I didn't even remember the names of the elves.
Can I just say that I love this character development of Anna falling in love with the Lord of the Rings trilogy? Because for the longest time, I have been the one who has been talking about the masterpiece that is Lord of the Rings, and now I have someone who has joined me in this. So thank you, Anna. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings fandom.
Gabriela, thank you. I can finally... I joined the bandwagon. I know the feeling of what it's like to love Lord of the Rings, okay?
Thank you. Welcome. We welcome you with open arms. And remember, one does not simply walk into Mordor.
But now, The Hobbit. It definitely is not the same. It doesn't have the same feeling as The Lord of the Rings does. I came there for the friendship. I wanted to, like, you know, the same feeling that I have watching these group of people just join together and have an adventure. Like, in The Hobbit, they do, but I don't feel the same way as I felt watching from The Lord of the Rings, you know, achieve what they wanted to.
Yes, totally. Because in Lord of the Rings, I remember every single character's name, and in The Hobbit, I can't tell you.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember none of the elves' names.
Hey, except the elves are Legolas. It's
yeah,
the dwarves and the hobbits.
Yeah, I don't... Okay, so the only
don't
one
don't confuse the species, Anna.
She's new. Oh, give her God. A break.
Give me a break, Anna. Okay. So I don't remember none of the dwarves' names, except I think the one that does Richard Madden, Thorin. And he's not even a likable character, okay? No, you had Richard...
Armitage.
Armitage, oh my God,
the Josie agenda. Richard Madden makes a surprise appearance in The Hobbit.
The Madden press play on The Hobbit.
Josie, okay.
Josie, I'm about to go on an adventure.
Okay. So I don't remember none of the dwarves' names except Thorin, that he is playing for Richard Armitage, and he's not even a likable character, okay?
No, he's horrible.
He's horrible, especially, okay, so I haven't seen the last one, but in the second one, he really just wanted, like, Bilbo to die, okay?
I mean,
go get my jewel.
I mean, that's the point, because it basically explains how, like, his lineage's downfall was, like, the lust for this jewel and his falling down the same path. So I guess that's the point of the character. But he's so unlikable.
He isn't. And then we have Legolas. Okay, he came back because he was the eye candy of Lord of the Rings.
And they need it.
Yeah.
They needed to draw the people in, and by the people, I mean me.
Yeah. Basically. And they brought him back, but he's not even the same character as Lord of the Rings, okay? He is so serious. He's such an asshole in this one. And I'm like, where is the Legolas that we all love? What happened to him? And I know it was like 60 years before the Lord of the Rings, but still, okay, this is such a major, like, backdrop for this character, and I just don't like it. And I just don't feel the same way for watching Lord of the Rings. I want the same satisfaction, and I just don't feel it. However, the second one, that is Isolation of Smaug, is better
than Desolation of Smaug.
Smaug.
Smaug, it's pronounced. Smaug.
Basically, I love the second one than the first one. I haven't seen the third one, but if I go to Letterboxd, it's the one with the worst ratings. So I'm not expecting that much. The fact that Gately Faith is only in the first one for 5 minutes and then in the second one for 20 minutes.
He stole the show, okay?
I wanted more, okay? Yeah. Where is the Lee Pace agenda? I hope that in the third one, which I'm gonna see pretty soon, he's there for most of the time. I hope so. Now, the last movie that we're gonna talk about is a film that all of us posters saw, and it's Kong primero, and Godzilla versus Kong.
No, you were right the first time. It's Kong versus Godzilla. Kong deserves top billing.
Okay, let's be honest. Again, if you would like to see our full thoughts, Ana and Gabriela actually reviewed this film on our channel, so please go check that out. A little bit just to get an idea of what Juan and I think. Obviamente, la película sigue King Kong as the protagonist, which is very interesting. And Godzilla is kind of placed in, like, the antagonistic part of the film, and he's sort of the villain, but it's not without reason. There is a motivation to him as a character, which is
because he's a bully.
He is a bully. I'm not gonna stop saying it. He was pretty much a bully. But it is a fun film. We had fun, especially like the posers. That's when Gabriela tiró lo de restore the Snyderverse in theaters.
Yes.
And she caused a commotion. So it was during that screening.
I have no regrets.
Full circle moment though.
But yeah, we enjoyed the film. It's not, some people here might argue that it's a cinematic masterpiece, but I'm not gonna say that it's like the best thing out there, but you get what you want. It's basically what everyone was asking for. So, I mean, who's complaining?
I mean, a lot of people are complaining, but like you said, we got exactly what we wanted. We saw Godzilla and Kong fight, destroy a couple of cities, you know, fuck some shit up. That's exactly what we wanted to see, and we got it. So I don't know what people were expecting, some sort of deep film, but...
This was fun for me.
It was a lot of fun.
But I will say, real quick, my boy Kong is booked and busy. He's in the next Space Jam movie. Y la gallina de palo, desempleado. Gracias. And if you want to watch Godzilla vs. Kong, you can by subscribing to HBO Max. You have until the end of April to watch it. Or you can check it out in your nearest theater or drive-in if it's available. Honestly, this is probably the most fun I've had with, like, a film. And it's, like, I feel like it's the first big film to come out since the pandemic. It's the film that's probably, like, excited me the most out of the new releases. I don't know if we feel the same way. And if you want to hear more of our spoiler reviews, just to let you know, on my, to quote Billy Kay, headshot and resume, I am a fight expert, so I will gladly let you all know the tea on what really happened. Josie, back me up here.
Yeah, what he said. He is a fight expert. So, before we go, also wanted to mention that Gabriela and I have had the chance to view
Shadow
and Bone. So we were able to watch Shadow and Bone, which will have its premiere on Netflix April 23rd. And you'll be able to hear our full thoughts April 21st. Social media reactions are live right now, so eventually you will be seeing our reactions. But our full review is going to go live April 21st, right before its premiere. And yeah, we've been watching, we've been enjoying, we have thoughts, we have feelings, we've been kind of thirsting, but it's to be expected. Yeah.
I have been screaming on Twitter and on the Film Posters group chat. I am so sorry. Actually, no, I'm not. This was one of my most anticipated things to premiere this year, so.
Yeah, she's not sorry. And yeah, I'm very grateful that we were able to get a screener because, we've been anticipating for this. We asked for this kind of early because we were so excited. So it's been fun, and we can't wait to share our thoughts with you. And that's actually all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Also, Facebook. Where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at GabbyCristina.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at The Josie Marie. And again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.